The following is an at-will presentation.
Welcome to episode one of the second season of Infinite Positivities. I'm Jenna Ushkowitz. This is a show where I take topics from my book, Choosing Glee, and speak with inspirational people about how to live a positive life. To all my listeners and subscribers from season one, thank you so much for joining me again. And if you're new to the show, so happy to have you. Chapter 14, Failure is Not a Dirty Word. We're starting this season off with the incomparable Jesse Tyler Ferguson. Most of you probably know him from his role as Mitchell on the hit TV show Modern Family. But he's also starring in an amazing one-man show on Broadway called Fully Committed. And I recently got the chance to sit down with him in his dressing room to talk all about it and much more. But first...
My name is Ashley Good, and I am the CEO and founder of the organization Fail Forward, which strives to help individuals and organizations fail better so that learning and innovation thrive. I think we fear failure first for simply neurobiological reasons. It tends to trigger a stress response in most of us, which feels bad. But beyond that, there are a lot of psychological reasons why we fear failure as well. Most studies suggest that losses are twice as powerful psychologically as gains. We tend to feel the pains of losses more than the satisfactions of gains, even when they're quantitatively equal. It's one of those reasons why when we fail, we remember it so well. That's what sticks out in our head, not the parts that work. Loss aversion is what makes us often do really stupid stuff to try to cover up what we've done and dooms us to want to hide our failures. I think it's an interesting tendency to acknowledge because it really says that it's not so much failure that we fear, but rather we fear being seen as a failure by others. I think there's a couple reasons why failure is necessary for success. The first, very simply, is we learn so well from failure. Nothing great was ever accomplished without taking a risk. And with risk comes some element of failure almost by definition. So because you're trying something new, so unless you're incredibly lucky, there's going to be some element of failure. I think we have to acknowledge that not all failures are created equally, and acknowledge that, say, sending that bad email to the wrong person, you know, sadly, that's not going to make us stronger, smarter, or wiser. But there are a different kind of failure, one that the Harvard professor Amy Edmondson refers to as praiseworthy failures, the ones that we acknowledge we have to take in pursuit of solving our most important and complex challenges. And those are the ones that I think we need to create more room for. I like to throw out the definitions that we currently have for failure, which tends to define failure as a lack of success, and I find that entirely unhelpful. And instead redefine failure, mistakes, errors as teachable moments.
Jesse.
Yeah.
I realize that every guest that I have, I do this. I do the. It's because they used to do that Pilates during Spring Awakening half hour, or Pilates at places.
Pilates.
Thank you so much for doing this.
Yeah,
welcome to
pleasure.
Infinite Positivities. You're here.
Where are we, Jenna?
We're in Jesse Tyler Ferguson's dressing room.
We're in a dressing room on Broadway.
Will you sign my playbill?
Sure.
Jesse, what show are you doing right now?
I'm doing a one-man play called Fully Committed.
It's wonderful.
Thank you. Yes, Jenna came to see it a few weeks ago.
Of course.
And it is about a reservationist at a very high-end restaurant. And I also play all the people calling into the restaurant trying to book a table. I play the maitre d'. I play the chef, I play the hostess, I play Gwyneth Paltrow's assistant, Bryce.
Bryce!
Price.
That's my favorite one, I think.
Yeah, he's a crowd favorite. So it's like 40-something characters, and it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of work, and it's a lot of fun.
Okay, so when they approached you to do this, 40 characters by yourself. I mean, you were literally on the stage by yourself for 90 minutes.
Yeah, about, yeah.
What was that like, taking the job and then prepping for something like that?
Well, when they gave me the script, it's a play that had been done off-Broadway, so I was aware of it, but I hadn't read it. And so I read the play, and it reads like a play with 40 characters, and then you have to sort of realize that, oh, I'm all those characters are my responsibility. And, you know, I'm actually in dialogue with, you know, all these characters are in dialogue with, it's not like they're doing monologues, they're in dialogue with one another. So it was a very daunting task, and rehearsals were tough because, you know, I would burn out after like 3.5 hours of speaking and creating these characters.
Sure,
so.
You're basically only going off of your own energy, too.
Yeah, yeah. So there was no one else to sort of fuel me. So Jason Moore, my director, he would sort of see my eyes glaze over and we'd be like, time of death, call it, 2:30 p.m.
And that's just, early, 2:30 p.m. Oh, is early.
I know, seriously, there were some short rehearsal days. But, you know, I was able to, you know, marinate in it on my own time. And we put it together in over a course of, you know, probably 4 months where we'd just, like, work on it in tiny chunks, and because I was still doing Modern Family when we were rehearsing.
Multitasking at its finest.
Yeah.
I saw this Instagram photo of you with like different numbers on the doors. What was that?
That was a rewrite that the playwright Becky Moe did a lot of rewrites for this play because it needs to sort of be updated to, you know, incorporate technology and what have you, and open table and cell phones and all these things that weren't around during the first run of the play. And so she had done this rewrite where it's me as Caroline Rosenstein Fishburne, who is this Upper East Side socialite, very entitled, and she is entertaining a major cultural dignitary, and she's bargaining for a table. And so it was this rewrite that Becky had done of like basically me bargaining times, and so it was just a series of numbers. And I could not memorize it for the life of me, so I did a cheat sheet, and they were hanging in my dressing room and in my bedroom. I had numbers wherever in the bathroom. I had the numbers, and it was basically like someone was like, "Are those the numbers from Lost?" Like, I was like, "No, it's actually just a rewrite for Fully Committed on Broadway."
I mean, if you get a chance to see it, there's only a few weeks left, but you guys, he is absolutely amazing, and it is so, so good. So go see it.
Thanks,
Jenna. Or just go to the New York Public Library and go get the video. Did they tape it?
They haven't taped my version, but they taped the original off-Broadway version.
Okay, got it.
So, but yeah, we'll see. I mean,
so
maybe
I'll just tape it with my cell phone then.
Just tape it. That's pretty legal,
you're
right?
Yeah, you're gonna be okay with that, right?
They're fine with that, right?
Yeah, I'll just hold it up.
Yeah, yeah. Bring a tripod.
And I'll bring
Patti
LuPone too. It'll be all good.
Oh, friend. Patti came to see this a few weeks ago.
She did? What was that like?
Well, she came back and said hi to me, and I definitely had a little meltdown.
That's amazing. Patti LuPone.
Patti LuPone. So for those of you who don't know who Patti LuPone is, she is the original Evita. She's basically Broadway royalty.
Yes.
She did
Mama Rose and Gypsy.
Mama Rose and Gypsy. She was the original Fantine in the London version of Les Miserables. She is basically the most iconic belter since Ethel Merman. And if you don't know who Ethel Merman is, you just have to Google it. Because now we're going into it like
a deep hole. We're going into a deep hole. Okay, so before we get out of this deep hole, can we just talk about your carpool karaoke for 1 second?
Yes.
Okay, so James Corden does this amazing thing with all these celebrities. And since the Tonys were coming up, you got to sing with some Broadway legends and James Corden in a car in New York.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. He asked me to do this. And I was like, how do I say no to this? I was actually out of town. I was taking a little vacation. I had 2 days off, so I was like, I'm going to get out of town for a little while. And then he asked me to do it, so I came back from my little mini vacation early.
I mean, you come back for carpool karaoke.
Yeah, it's me and Audra McDonald and Jane Krakowski and Lin-Manuel Miranda, and it was that's a very fun group of people to be with. And it's
singing amazing songs, which I think even if people don't know Broadway that well, they know these songs, right?
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, like us doing One Day More was just, you know, from Les Miserables was the highlight of my year. And singing next to Audra McDonald, who, again, if you don't know who she is, she's won more Tony Awards than anyone else in the history of the Tony Awards. She's won 6 Tony Awards, and she is only in her mid-40s, and she is
stunning.
Absolutely amazing. And so I was sitting next to her while she was hitting high C's. It's pretty amazing.
It's like a dream come true. It's like the 12-year-old in me would, like, pee the pants of the back of the car.
I used to sing, yeah. I used to sing Les Miserables in my bedroom, you know, growing up in Albuquerque, New Mexico, like sing all the roles. And then to be like, in a car with Audra McDonald doing it, I was like, are you kidding me right now?
I cried when I watched it.
It's very emotional.
It is very emotional. So you sang in your room. Did you perform as a kid?
Mm-hmm. I grew up in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and I was part of the Albuquerque community theater. And it was a group of kids performing for other kids, basically. And I think my first role was the White Rabbit in Alice in Wonderland.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I was a very quiet and shy kid, so my mom was very surprised that I actually wanted to, you know, be on the other side of the footlights.
Interesting. And so did you have stage fright, or was that something that, like, went away when you performed?
I don't remember having stage fright. I remember always being a little nervous about being on stage, but I felt like that was where I was able to sort of express myself, and, like, I loved hiding behind other characters. I don't know if that's a healthy thing or not, but like, I still like it. Mm-hmm. So, but I definitely felt more at home on stage than sometimes I did, you know, in reality. So
interesting. And, you know, obviously growing up as a performer and then becoming, you know, just Dallas Ferguson, we deal with rejection on the daily, right?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
And it becomes like you have to become like a bouncing board. It's just like, no, and it goes away.
Yeah.
Did you take rejection well as a kid growing up?
Not really. I mean, certainly as an actor, you have to learn how to get a thick skin. That's just part of the job. And like, the thing I always tell young actors, and it's actually can be applied to anyone who's, you know, even not an actor, like just as far as taking criticism, you know, there is comfort in knowing that everyone goes through that and it doesn't get easier, because I don't think rejection ever does get easier. I think, you know, having the thick skin is something that you acclimate to, but the rejection itself still hurts the same way it did when you were a kid. You just maybe react to it a different way.
Absolutely.
You know, I remember auditioning for a musical at the Albuquerque Children's Theater, and it was Into the Woods, and I wanted to be Jack in Into the Woods, and I did not get the role. And the kid Adam, who would get every role that I ever auditioned for, he got the part again.
Of course he did. Adam, we're coming for you.
And I was really, really upset. I thought that should have been my part. And I remember coming home to my mom just bawling. I was like, I didn't get the part. And I mean, I would never react that way now. I don't think I would about not getting a role, but I would still probably feel the same pain.
Sure, sure. I mean, how do you feel like, I, you know, even at the level that you get to where you are acclaimed and you're doing amazing, mm-hmm. accomplishing such wonderful things, it's like you still deal with rejection. We still deal with that every day.
Absolutely.
How do you now handle it? Like, what did you learn along the way?
Well, I now know, well, it's also, you could see the trajectory of the career. Like, I see where I'm at now, and I see all the things that I haven't gotten, and yet I still see where I'm at now. So there is like some perspective there.
Sure.
You know, it's harder when you're younger and like you're just starting out and you're like, well, will I ever get a big break or anything? And it's, you know, so I have that foresight, but I do feel like there is another piece of advice I always give actors particularly, but again, could be applied to anyone, is just always knowing that you are the only version of you, and like what you do, no one else can do. And so, you know, if you stay true to that, I do feel like people will come around and give you opportunity. Because I think people really respect authenticity, mm-hmm. and they can read it. And like the minute you walk into a room, if you're an authentic person, and if you're trying to do something and be something that's not really organic, I think that really reads.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, I still do get disappointed by opportunities that I don't follow through with or that aren't given to me, you know, but at the same time, not every job can be my job, or else then that would be a really boring, television and film and theater would be really boring if I was a star of everything.
Doing wouldn't 40 it? Different things, wouldn't it? 40 things at one time.
Yeah.
what do you, like, in 10 years, where do you see yourself?
That's a hard one, because I feel like I just, you know, I it's always so hard to project where. I never thought 10 years ago that I would be here. So it's like, and I'm thrilled with where I'm at now. So it's like, I always feel like that's a hard question to answer, because I want to be surprised.
Right.
But I do feel like I want to continue doing work that challenges me and surprises me and is something that scares me. I don't like, you know, repeating myself. You know, one of the things that I've been really trying to do since getting Modern Family and playing Mitchell, it's like I want to do something that is just very different from Mitchell. So like, you know, if it's doing Shakespeare in the Park, or if it's doing, you know, Spamlot at the Hollywood Bowl, or if it's doing guest judging on So You Think You Can Dance, or like whatever it is, like that's just, it's different than, I don't want to play another version of Mitchell. Right. So I do, if I can continue on that track and just continuing to surprise myself in 10 years, I would be thrilled with that.
I mean, you continue to grow that way. That's the only way to do it.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, speaking of doing something that scares you, I think it's like you have to live in the fear in order to succeed. And if you fail, it's okay, right?
Well, for sure. And I think that, you know, if I'm not scared by something, I sort of feel like it's not the right thing for me. Mm. You know, I do feel, and like, and when I, and I, listen, I've, some of these things that I'm scared of, I've succeeded at greatly. And I know that because like, I feel good about myself. And there are things that I've also done that I'm like, I could have done that better. So like, you know, it's not to say that I'm always going to come out smelling like roses at the end of it, but I could be happy that, and I honestly, if it scares me, then I'm happier. If I did fail at it, I was like, well, at least I did something that really scared me. If it was something that was like, felt comfortable, and then I bombed at it, I'd be like, well, I shouldn't have done that, because it's like, it's in my comfort zone.
Right.
So like, at least I'm challenging myself in the process of failing.
It's like the least we can do.
Yeah, you know? At least you can do.
What about, so Modern Family, I mean, you guys have an incredible track. It's, you're going into your eighth year.
Yeah.
That's like unheard of for TV in the realm of TV.
Sure,
some get
one
season, two seasons.
Right.
You guys have eight.
We have eight, which, you know, it's I'm thrilled. I'm very excited. You know, we started, you know, Glee started the exact same year as
that's
Modern
how we
Family.
Met.
I know,
that's
how
we met.
So, you know, that I look back at like when we, like the first seasons of our show, and that seems like so long ago.
So long ago. And it was just so exciting.
So exciting.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's like, you know, it's, I'm thrilled that we are continuing an eighth year. Like I think the eighth, this next year coming up is our last contracted year. So we'll see what happens. I don't know. You know, we might be done. It's, who knows? But it's exciting.
How do you keep Mitchell fresh? How do you keep him sort of new? I don't know if that's the right question.
No, I mean, that's totally legitimate. I think like, you know, when you're playing, and you probably feel the same way, like when you're doing a character for so long, you know, it is hard because there is something about audiences tuning in to that your show, whether it be Glee or Modern Family, and they want to see, they don't want to see huge growth. They want to see these archetypes that they recognize. They want Phil to always be wacky, and they want Cameron to be, you know, flamboyant, and they want Mitchell to be uptight. It's, you know, it's the same way they want, you know, Lea Michele's character in Glee to be a diva.
Type A,
like,
crazy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they don't want to see her, like, all of a sudden, like, have this, like, major
change.
That being said, you know, you do want to be able to change and grow as characters. So, but it's done through the lens of television, and so it's sometimes done subtly. And, like, really, as an actor, all you can do is try and bring fresh spins and you know, takes to things, because it's a lot of it's in the writing, you know. We have great writers who, you know, really know our voices, and you know, then we have to sort of collaborate on how to make that fresh.
Sure. I mean, you guys obviously have done something right. it's different than doing theater, because, you know, for theater it's like, how do you keep it fresh every single night? Because you're doing from point A to point B every single night.
And then you go back to point A the next
night.
Right,
and it's like, how do you do it again? But even so, on TV, for 8 years you're living in this character that you're like, I don't want them to be boring. I don't want them to be doing the same exact thing all the time.
Right.
But in the same, you know, thing, these people are sitting in their underwear in the living room expecting that, you know, those characters that they love and they feel like they know. So.
Sure, it's a puzzle, and like, you know, you don't want to like disrupt the alchemy of like, you know, this thing that you've created.
Right. You also have a nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about it.
So I have this nonprofit that I started with my husband. It's called Tie the Knot, and the website's tietheknot.org. And we started it, it's a line of bow ties. And we also have cufflinks and tie clips and long ties as well, but it's mostly bow ties. And we started it to raise money for marriage equality. And, you know, about a year ago, we won marriage equality nationally. And so we are no longer having to raise money for marriage equality per se, but we are still raising money for LGBTQ outreach. Also, you know, there's a lot of states where you can be married on a Sunday and then fired from your job on a Monday for being gay. So, like, there's a lot of work to still be done as far as, you know, equality and civil rights for amongst the LGBTQ community. And so we're still raising money, and it's a very lighthearted, fun way of raising money for something we really care about.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Where can you get the
bow ties?
The bow ties.
Well, we partnered up with the Tie Bar, which is a really great online men's store. But it's so you can get them up at thetiebar.com, or there's a link also on tiethenot.org.
They're very cute. You have
they
to go
are
get them.
Very cute. There's actually a fully committed bow tie that's hanging out behind you. See that right there? How
oh,
cute
yeah.
is that?
It's a fully committed one.
Yeah.
Sorry, you can't see it.
You can't see it, but you can find go online and look at the fully committed bow tie. It's very cute. VVC. Very, very cute.
Have you had any, like, disasters during the show? Because it's just you up there.
Not disasters where, like, things have, like, really crumbled, but I have lost my place or forgotten which character. The thing is, I have to, it's one of those plays where you have to sort of be in the moment and then also thinking ahead to who's coming up next. And if something goes awry or I'm unhappy with something, I can't sit in it for too long and I can't judge it because I have to move on.
Right.
But there have been a few times where I was like, maybe tomorrow I should try, and then like I don't know who's next. So like I have actually picked up the phone. I have no idea who's on the phone, who I'm supposed to be on the phone. So I've gotten myself out of it because I know the play well enough. And
sure.
The audience probably just thinks, oh, that's a weird moment that just happened on stage and then it's gone. But like to
I'm
me
sure there's
it feels
Mark,
disastrous.
Of course. And then you come back and you're like, I have tomorrow to fix it.
Yeah.
Are you excited to go back to LA?
I am. I love New York, and I'm a New Yorker. You're a New York girl, right?
Yeah.
I don't know how you felt about moving to LA when you moved to LA, but I felt when I moved to LA, I was like not ready for it. I did not want to leave New York. I was thrilled to have a job in LA. Loved my job, but I was really mourning the loss of
New York.
That being said, I'm one of those New Yorkers that kind of has a secret love affair with Los Angeles. I think part of it's because I'm married now and I have, you know, a life set up there.
Sure.
And I love my in-laws and they're close. And, like, I do miss, like, having a car and, like, you know.
I have the same thing. Like, I go to L.A. and I, like, sit in it for a while and then I'm like, ugh, New York, I don't need it.
Yeah.
And then, like.
And then you miss it desperately.
Desperately when you come back. And you can see, I think I saw 8 shows in the last, like,
well, that's
2 and a half
culturally,
weeks.
Culturally, there's nowhere like New York.
I know. There really isn't.
Absolutely not.
You know, so you guys just did a spelling bee, too. You know Jose is, like, a really good friend of mine.
I know.
Sorry, this
I
is
know.
Not interesting for you guys at all.
It could be. There might be some spelling bee fans out there.
Spelling bee. That was a great show. You guys got nominated for a Tony for that, right?
We did. We were nominated for a Tony against it was the same year that Spamalot was on Broadway, which was just sort of this huge, unstoppable beast, and that took a lot of the Tony Awards. But it was a very healthy year on Broadway, actually.
Yeah.
Much like this year.
Was that your Broadway debut?
No, I did my Broadway debut. I made my Broadway debut when I was 21 years old.
Whoa.
In a musical called On the Town with Jose Ooh. Lana.
Oh, my goodness. You just, you know, it's a small town. It keeps getting smaller.
Mm-hmm.
You think you'll come back to Broadway again after this?
I would love to. I mean, I have, it took me a while. It was 10 years before I did Fully Committed that Spelling Bee was 10 years ago. So it took me 10 years to get back. But I'm desperate to get back. I think once Modern Family is done, I would really like to do a big, splashy Broadway musical or something, you know, that takes a little bit more of my time, and I would love to do that.
Absolutely. Okay, so I do this with some of my guests.
Mm-hmm.
Give you 2 things. You tell me which one you prefer.
Okay.
Stage or TV?
Oh, gosh.
People get very upset at these, just so
they
you know.
They do?
Yeah, you can be upset. It's okay. They get, like, up in arms about
it. Do I have to choose one which I like more?
Yeah. Or you can talk about it.
Well,
just
my
talk
heart
about it.
Is always with theater. I mean, I dreamed of being on stage, on Broadway, just even in the ensemble of a musical since I was a kid. So, like, to be on stage is everything. I love that interaction between an audience. I love that it's an actor's medium. You know, on television, your performance gets edited and changed and it goes to a million other hands, and then you don't have any control of your performance. I love that I'm in control of my performance every night.
Sure.
I love some of the TV that I have done. Like, Modern Family has had such a great impact on my career, but also I think socially it's had wonderful ramifications, you know, and I've been able to sort of, and I think the same thing with Glee, you know, there was so much good stuff that happened just as far as the discussion about being gay, and like, I think that is huge. So I reached so many more people than I ever would have on theater. So I love TV for that reason.
Okay. So both.
I have to say both, but I think if I had to, if there was a gun to my head, I would say theater.
Okay. I agree. I feel the same way.
Yeah.
Knots or bows?
Knots or bows? Bows. Of course.
Duh. A hotel or Airbnb?
Hotel. Don't even get me. I can't. I don't want to be amongst someone else's stuff.
I'm with you.
I love
a snob. Hotels. I like a white comforter. Mm-hmm. Give me some room service. Yes. Clean my room and it's clean
Absolutely
when I get back.
Absolutely hotels.
You know, Matt Morrison said the same thing. I thought he was going to say Airbnb, but he said hotel too. Yeah, so he's in the club.
Oh, thank God.
A party or your couch?
My couch.
Yes.
Yes.
Golden Globes or Emmys?
Oh. Well, we've done very well at the Emmys, so I should say the Emmys, but there's booze at the Golden Globes.
You can play drinking games during the Globes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the Globes. Also, I feel like the few times our shows were nominated together, we were like sitting right next to one another.
We were.
So it was like a big block party in our section of the Golden Globes. So I have very fond memories of that.
I do. I love the Golden Globes as well. You were nominated for Emmy 5 times, right?
Yeah.
5 times.
Lost all 5, but still thrilled to be nominated.
Okay, Susan Lucci. That's amazing. Seriously, 5 times.
That's crazy.
Incredible.
That was crazy.
You could be 5-time Emmy nominee.
Nominee. Jesse
Tyler Ferguson.
It sounds
Ferguson.
Like it's leading up to something really exciting. 5-time Emmy Award nominee.
Nominee.
Yeah.
Nominee.
Nominee.
Water or wine?
Oh, right now, water, but after the show's done, wine.
Okay, so one before, one after.
Yes.
Is that your drink of choice?
Well, no, I haven't been able to drink since doing the show at all, but I love wine. Actually, look behind you. There's a lot of whiskey right there, but I haven't had any of that in a long time.
So you haven't drank at all?
Really not in the
minimal,
past, month.
Minimal.
Very minimal.
I know. You have a lot of vocal
A lot of words and a lot of vocal requirements. So.
Snapchat or Twitter?
Oh, God. Snapchat. Although I'm just recently into it.
I know, I follow you on it.
Although if you added Instagram into the mix, I'd say Instagram.
Oh, so Snapchat or Instagram, you pick Instagram.
I pick Instagram, yeah.
Interesting. Why is that?
I don't know. I just like that you curate a page. Snapchat goes away, which is a great thing, too.
True. But you can save them. You know
I know, but that's a whole thing. And then your phone is clogged with nonsense.
You know what I would have said? You Snapchat, and then you put it on your Instagram.
I've done that before, yeah.
I like that, too.
Yeah.
So one last thing. Just any advice for people who are scared of failing?
Well, you're not alone. I will say that much. I will also say that failure will always happen. So if you're scared of it, acknowledge the fear, but know that you're gonna come up against failure again. No one gets through life without some sort of failure, and failure should not be a negative word.
I agree. It should not.
It should be growth. It's something you go through to get to a better thing.
Exactly. Thank you so much. Have a great show tonight.
Thank you.
You are so accomplished and so wonderful and such a great human being. So thank you for coming on.
Thanks, love.
Thanks so much for joining me on another episode of Infinite Positivities. I'm so happy to be back from the break we took revving up for this new season, and I promise it's going to be a great one. Next week, my guest will be Tala Rossi.
I have respect for these Muslim women who cover by choice. You know, I'm a Muslim woman, but I don't believe in covering myself, you know? And then I also had respect for the woman who wore a bikini in a conservative country. And I think there was something very powerful about standing up for your beliefs, even if you're, you know, standing up by yourself.
Be sure to tune in for that. And in the meantime, check out the new installment of my audio diary this Friday. And if you're in New York, check out Jesse Tyler Ferguson's play Fully Committed, which runs until July 31st on Broadway at the Lyceum Theater. Have a great week, and remember, don't be afraid to fail.